Okay, good morning. Our topic for this morning is bitachon. And I find this a very overwhelming topic because there is so much to say about this that I had to try to figure out what am I going to put into 1 hour. I must say that the vadim that I do in Yerushalayim and in Beit Shemesh, we've done many different topics. We've done simcha and tznius and decision-making and akarsa tov and anger. And the ladies keep saying, more bitachon, more bitachon, more bitachon. Because there's just so much going on in our world. And we need so much anchoring. And therefore, there's like an endless need to be involved in bitachon. I must say that bitachon is one of these topics that when you talk about it, and you think about it, and you read about it, it really, really affects you very, very strongly. And therefore, just the involvement itself provides a certain kind of a calmness that comes over a person. And I will start by quoting from Chassid Yavetz, that is a very, very beautiful lashon about what happens with bitachon. Ach to'elet ha-bitachon ba'olam, the benefits of bitachon in this world. Mehem menuchat ha-lev min ha-dagot ha-olamiyot, the calmness of your heart from the this-worldly problems. The hashalva and the tranquility. Me nidnud hanefesh v'tza'ara. Nidnud hanefesh is like this fluctuation of the soul and the pain of the soul. Lachsoch ta'avoteha hagufaniyot. It helps you with physical temptation. V'hu behashket v'bebitcha. And he finds himself calm and bitcha, like secure, ubishalva, ba'olam hazeh. You know, a lot of our ruchnias we think is going to pay off in olam haba. Bitachon is one of those things that it pays off largely in olam hazeh and also in olam haba. The quality of your life is different when you're anchored and when so many different aspects of life become more manageable. Okay. So I had to figure out what are we going to talk about today because there's so many different pieces. So I decided to work a little bit with the most recent parshios, Yosef HaTzadik. We learned so much about bitachon from Yosef. And I want to share with you even just a little piece. We know, the Torah tells us, that when Yosef was taken away to be sold as a slave, he was taken away with merchants of perfume. And Chazal tell us that Oto HaTzadik should not have to suffer the bad smell of tar or other types of materials that he could have been together with. Now, in my Vadim on Bitachon, we developed an anchor called the good smell. The good smell means that when you are going through something difficult, and there's a tiny detail, Yosef HaTzadik was... He was in a tragic situation. His brothers wanted to kill him, and instead he was taken and sold off to slavery, removed from his family. He was a young boy, didn't know what the future was going to hold. And it happens to be that there was good smell where he was going. We can't even call that the silver lining in the cloud. The silver lining in the cloud is when there's some nice benefits that came out of something. A good smell is something even smaller than that. You wouldn't say, well, it was worth getting sold into slavery because at least there was a good smell there. A good smell is something tiny. In proportion to the big nisayon that the person is going through, it is something tiny. So what is the value of the good smell? The value of the good smell is that it symbolizes that Hashem works out every little detail and that there's no extra suffering. Therefore, it's more symbolic than anything else. It's when you know that even the difficult aspects of what you're going through are brought by that same loving God who threw you a little good smell. And when we look for good smells in difficult situations, we remind ourselves that Hashem doesn't want us to suffer. Whatever he's doing is something corrective for our good. and that this nisayon will not go on any longer than it has to, and that any details that could be pleasant around it will be, and that anything that isn't pleasant is part of the very thought-out plan that Hashem had. So the homework that our Arvah did, and back then we used to do homework, now I don't give homework so often, was that we're supposed to look for good smells in difficult situations. So I'll give you an example. A woman was telling me, and again, if it was too big, it would already be called a silver lining. It has to be something very small, not really of important relevance to the bigger picture, and yet something that reminds you that Hashem is in the picture. So there was a woman in one of my groups who gave birth to a child who had a certain very rare kind of syndrome. And it wasn't life-threatening, but lifelong. And she was going with this newborn baby from doctor to doctor to try to find a diagnosis and how to help the situation. She finally had met with a very, very big professional in Hadassah Hospital in Yerushalayim who had given the diagnosis. And it was difficult. It wasn't easy. She said that she was crying and she's holding her newborn baby. And she walks out of the hospital and it's pouring rain. And she has to run in the rain with the baby. And then she notices that the awning of the hospital extends to only cover one area where one car is parked, and that's her car. And she said, it gave me kach. It's nothing compared to the lifelong diagnosis, but it's that little smell that reminds you that Hashem is with you. And some people said, when somebody said that a child had gotten into some kind of accident, they had to go to the hospital, it was a crazy day. She got home, her cleaning lady had been there that day, and the kitchen was clean. Little things. You're sitting at, you're in a doctor's office, you're waiting for a very worrisome appointment, and your favorite song is playing in the office. It's little things that we pick up that give us the koach to understand that Hashem is navigating the entire picture. These small things, the good smells, are important because they indicate that every aspect of this nisayon is being navigated. There's a certain mashal that Rav Baruch Mordechai Ezrachi in Yerushalayim used to give. And it's a very male mashal, and it belongs a few hundred years ago. But it gets the point across. He says, imagine that you have two people lying in a bed in two separate places. And in each case, they're both about to be attacked by somebody holding a knife. I told you it wasn't a very pleasant mashal. In one case, the attacker swipes the knife with alcohol before he puts it into the person's body. And in the other case, he doesn't. Just puts the what's the difference between the two people? One of them is a surgeon, and the other one is a murderer. Now, this is a few hundred years ago, right? Because that swiping is an indication there's going to be blood and suffering and unpleasant things coming afterwards. But when the knife is swiped, you know that everything that's going to come, as uncomfortable as it is corrective. When the knife is not swiped, the same blood and pain is destructive. And therefore, those little good smells teach you that even the unpleasant aspects of your nisayon are there for your good. And that's the mashal. Okay. There is so much to say. I'm saying, oh, should I put in this? Should I put in that? We know one of my favorite ideas about bitachon that really, for me, was an anchor throughout the war was a pasuk in Tehillim Lamed Beis. The pasuk says, Habotech b'Hashem, Chesed Yisovevenu. Now, the reason why I'm bringing in that pasuk now is that there are many, many explanations of that pasuk. And one of them is exactly what we said just now. Habotech b'Hashem, Chesed Yisovevenu. He's always noticing the good smells around. But I'd like to bring two opinions on this pasuk that are both very important for us when it comes to bitachon. There is the main opinion here is that the Botech B'Hashem, his bitachon is a magnet. What is he attracting with the magnet? He's attracting solutions to his problems. Habotach b'Hashem, chesed yisov avenu. So let's demonstrate what that means. I actually have a great real proof. I have a woman who sits right next to me in my class in Beit Shemesh, and she says that she gave birth to a child around maybe 15 years ago who had cystic fibrosis. Now, there are a lot of different types of cystic fibrosis. She said the doctor said something that's not common for doctors to say. He said, most doctors would say there's no cure for what your child has. This doctor said, I'd like you to coast and maintain your child's health because I'm sure that one day there will be a medication that will treat. And you have to hold on to his health while laboratories in different places in the world are researching. Yeah. And she says to me, Kahaya, there is now a medication that he takes that actually is, I don't understand the medical things, affecting the mutation of cystic fibrosis in his body. And this is years later. Habotach b'Hashem chesed yisov avenu. All the research and the millions of dollars and the brilliant scientists all over the world who are researching all kinds of solutions to problems, your bitachon attracts the solution to the problem. And shidochem, sometimes is a girl who feels she's dated every boy on the East Coast. And suddenly, with her bitachon, somebody shows up from Australia or from New Zealand or South Africa or England, and there he is. But she believed he was there. And her bitachon helps attract the solution that she's looking for. So we, with our bitachon, have to believe that Hashem has many, many, many solutions to problems. And at the right time, that solution is going to emerge. I have so many proofs for this in so many ways. And I feel funny to even say this because I'm a layman in all these fields, but these are just stories that people tell me. So many years ago, I went to a workshop. I used to be like, I'm a psychologist wannabe. So I always have like a psychology book on my night table. And I used to have more time to go to workshops and all kinds of, you know, I used to, you know, go to workshop on eating disorders and go to workshop on depression and go to workshop on all kinds of things. So I once went to a workshop on personality disorders. The person presenting was a psychiatrist whose specialty was personality disorders. And he was talking about borderline personality disorder and he was describing it and it's very, 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 very difficult. And he basically said there's really no way to treat borderline. And he said, I give therapy, I support the person, I hold them, I help the family, but there's really no treatment. Now, that was around 15 years ago. And since then, there's been the development of DBT, Dialectic Behavioral Therapy, which really is helpful for borderline. Now, I'm not saying that it treats every borderline, but the idea is that the same expert who said years ago there is no method for treating borderline, now there is. I remember years and years ago when people used to struggle with depression and they were women in the fertility, the stage of life of pregnancies and childbirths. Many of them were not treated for their depression because the medication wasn't good for the fetus. And today there are medications that many professionals consider safe. And I know people who've been on antidepressants throughout all their pregnancies and childbirths and nursing, that's a chesed yisov avenu. Imagine somebody who's struggling and cannot be treated at such an important stage, and it's not good for the fetus that the mother should be depressed either. So the fact is that every time a solution to a problem comes out that wasn't there, somebody's bitachon helped all that research that was being done, and all of a sudden something comes out. I'll give one more example, and again, I feel silly to say these examples because I'm not the medical expert. I know many, many people who have not treated their children for attention deficit issues because it increased anxiety to psychostimulant and the child, you know, went on Ritalin and then was very, very anxious. So today there are medications that were researched for treating anxiety that also treat ADD. Again, I'm not saying how effective any of these things are, but the fact that something could help a child with ADD and also helping with anxiety, these are nisim. I view these things as nisim because I know how many people suffered before they existed. Mm-hmm. And therefore, we need to believe that every problem has a solution that's out there. Habotach b'Hashem chesed yisov aveno. You attract solutions to the problems. Yes.
I just have to say this because we're talking about bitachon, and I'm raising it another level. Because when I was in Shidduchim, I said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu when I was davening, this is one thing I can't handle. You have to take care of it for me. I'm not getting involved. You just take care of it. And Baruch Hashem, I didn't get involved. HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought it down. That's it.
Amazing.
But it was that bitachon that I knew he's doing this for
beautiful,
me.
Beautiful, beautiful. It's exactly what we're demonstrating. And the person's bitachon becomes the magnet, and the circle around are the solutions to the problems. The Chafetz Chaim has another way of defining this pasuk, Habotach b'Hashem chesed yisov aveno. It's very beautiful. He says the person who has bitachon realizes that whatever his struggle is really coming from a loving God for his good. It's coming to cure him. So as he goes through the nisayon, he knows that it's medicine. But medicine, as the expression goes, even when you know it's going to cure you, it's still a bitter pill to swallow. So you're going through the nisayon. You know that ultimately it's for your good. But you're wincing. It's hard. It's bitter. The Chafetz Chaim says, chesed yisov aveno means that the person should look for the beauty in Hashem's world, which is a little counterintuitive when you're going through a hard time to notice beautiful sunsets and appreciate things that are going well and just get nachas from what is good. But he says something amazing. Chesed yisov aveno, a circle around it. He says, looking at Hashem's chesed in the world turns the bitter pill into a capsule. A capsule has a thin film that surrounds the bitterness, so that when the person swallows, he doesn't have to have the bitter taste. He says, if you're going through a hard time, more than ever, you have to look at the things that you enjoy in life, notice the beauty, and you surround yourself with chesed, and it makes it easier to swallow the nisayon, to handle it. And I think that both of these are such important ways of looking at bitachon. And what, in one case, you're zocha to something through your bitachon. In the other case, you're being asked to do something in order to protect yourself in the nisayon. Okay. Like I said, there's so much that we can talk about. But I want to mention a very specific piece that was just in the Parshios of the last weeks with Yosef. Everybody knows this sugya of Yosef and the Sar HaMashkim. Yosef was together with this person in jail. This person gets out, and he says, it doesn't sound so complicated, but he says to the Sar HaMashkim, we'll quote the Lashon, he says, Ki'im zechartani itcha, kasher yitav lecha, na'asa imadi chesed, viskartani el paro, votzitani min habayit hazeh. This is Bereishis Mem Yudalit. The Pasuk says, we all know this, we've learned this, that he twice in the Pasuk said, please remind Paro about me. And we know that because of that, he got 2 extra years in jail. The big question that always comes up is, where did Yosef HaTzadik go wrong? What was so bad? Was that not, we know we're supposed to do Ishtadlos. So here he was, the only person he was with, was going to Paro, and he said, remind Paro about me. What actually is so bad about that? There are many, many different interpretations. But I like to share with you the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish has a very, very beautiful way that he understands this. We have a pasuk in Tehillim Lamed that relates to Yosef. It says, Ashrei hagever, asher sam Hashem miftacho, velo pana el rehavim, v'shotei kazav. Pasuk says, blessed is the person who trusts in Hashem and doesn't turn to a rahav is like a self-absorbed person, a selfish person. So It sounds like a contrast pasuk. Blessed is the person who trusts in Hashem, and not good to go to these other people. Talking about two different people. The Medrash in Bereishis Rabbah says that the entire pasuk is talking about Yosef. Ashrei hagever asher sam Hashem b'tavocho zo Yosef. Yosef was a big baal bitachon. And then the end of the pasuk criticizes him and says, but you turned to the Sarah Mashkim and you asked him for help. So our question is, one second, is Yosef being praised or is he being criticized? Which one? And here the Chazon Ish does something that is so applicable to our lives. To give you the shorter version of the Chazon Ish, we'll go into the longer version. The Chazon Ish is saying you can be a baal bitachon and make a mistake. That's the short version. Your bitachon is not, your definition as a baal bitachon is not undermined by the fact that sometimes you make mistakes. Okay, that's the short version. But let's look at the longer version because it teaches us so much. Biyot shenitchayav ha'adam bepu'ulot v'lo lismoch al nisa. Because a person has to do his hishtadlus and he can't rely on miracles. Chiyev Yosef et atzmo l'shamesh bihizdamnut zo l'vakesh misar mashkim. Very logical. Yosef says, I can't rely on an ace. I have to do hishtadlus. This is my hishtadlus. I'll ask the Sar Mashkim. What was the problem? The omnam bihiyot shelefi tchunat harehavim ein bitivo liskor v'lahativ. The Chazon Ish is making a very psychological observation. The pasuk says, "Below pana el rahavim v'shote chazav." A rahav is an egocentric person, a person who is not going to remember other people. When you ask somebody for a favor, there are certain kind of people whose brains are like Velcro for commitments. You ask for something, they won't forget it until they take care of it. And then you have people whose brains are like Teflon. The second they leave, they forgot that you asked them for something. Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot. Chazon Ish is making a psychological observation here and saying, Yosef, you were with this person in jail. Didn't you realize that he was going to forget you the second he was free? And that's why the Pasuk in Tehillim calls it a rahav. It says that there are certain people who just, they're very into themselves and they're not going to remember. And therefore, it was improper hishtadlus. Very interesting. So let's go further. I'll go back a little so you can understand what I just said before. They don't remember other people. They don't do favors for other people. Now the Chazon Ish is going a step further. He's saying, since this person was not the right person to ask a favor for, if you ask such a person for a favor, you're showing that you're desperate. And desperation is already a problem vis-a-vis bitachon. So what we're learning here is when a person does hishtadlus, he's supposed to do hishtadlus that makes sense for the thing that he needs. When he starts, as we say in English, grasping at straws, that is the problem. I have to tell you, ladies, I have a visual for this. There was one time when I was late for work and I was looking for my car keys. So, you know, the first thing I did was I started like, you know, and I was really, it was getting later and later. So I have a certain basket at home with keys and I turned it over and I'm starting and I ran all over the house looking and dumping over things looking. Of course, my cell phone was in my pocket. That's how it always works out. When I got home after work, I got such a visual of this because I saw what I was doing. I got home, I found a lot of things dumped over. The first one or two things that I had dumped made sense. To look in my basket of keys and dump it over makes sense. To look in a basket where I keep things that I need makes sense. But as I was getting more and more desperate, I was taking the kids' magnetiles and turning it over. I took my Pesach stuff and took it over. Like, you know, it was January. It wasn't going to be in my Pesach things, my car keys. But I saw my desperation that I ended up just doing things that were ridiculous. So this became my visual for this Chazon Ish. The shtadlus is supposed to be grounded. And hishtadlus has to be something that makes sense. And when I'm grasping at straws, I'm not doing the right thing anymore. Now let's see what the Chazon Ish does next. Hamiyuash oseh kol ma sheyachol. A person who's desperate will do anything. Af darim harichokim mikol toelet. Even things that make no sense. Aval ein laboteach lasot kmo eila. A Baal Bitachon, he does hishtadlus because that's the etiquette in the post-Adam and Rishon world to do hishtadlus. But he's not going to do things that are ridiculous. Because the things that are ridiculous seem to imply that he thinks he's controlling the outcome. And we said in our Sunday, our very first time we met, I contribute, he controls. My contribution has to be normal. It can't be things where I'm so anxious because I think that I'm controlling this. And here we get to a very beautiful image that the Chazon Ish gives. The ein pula zo mi pulot ha-chova. It's not what you're required to do. It's not what you're supposed to do. The yesh b'ma'aseh ze ke'ein zriat avak al zohar ha'emuna v'abitachon. When a person does an act out of desperation, he is putting dust on the shine of his emuna bitachon. So let's say a person has a diamond, and he puts dust on the diamond. His emuna bitachon is not shining anymore. But the Chazon Ish is teaching you that you're still a Baal bitachon. It just got a little clouded over by what you just did. And I think that this is so, so important, because we will make mistakes. We will get anxious sometimes. We will sometimes do something which is not really appropriate for my bitachon. So what you did was, your emuna bitachon was shining. And now you put some dust on it, and it's a little cloudy. But it can be cleaned, and it can be restored. And that's why the pasuk says, Asher gever asher sam Hashem evtacho, Yosef atzadik, you still are the Baal bitachon. V'lo panal rahavim, now you have to clean up your bitachon and make it shine again. And I think it's so important for us, because sometimes we beat ourselves up and we say, Baal Bitachon does this. Why did I run around? Why was I so nervous? I made a mistake and I have to clean it up. But my Bitachon is still there. And the Chazon Ish is teaching us something very important about how we manage our mistakes, and that Yosef is still considered a Baal Bitachon. Okay. I want to tell you one more piece that we learned from this whole story of the from the Sar Hamashkim. You know, I when I first started teaching the topic of Bitachon, we did a lot of the very important basics, like health, shidochim, parnasa. But we have a pasuk in Mishlei Gimel where the pasuk says, "Bechol drachecha da'ehu." You should know Hashem in all of your ways. Rabbeinu Yonah says on that pasuk that we all have areas where we put bitachon naturally, and then we have areas where we don't think to put bitachon. Bechol drachecha da'ehu teaches you to put bitachon in places that might not be so obvious. So I want to demonstrate, in our Jewish women's lives, there are so many areas where we could put bitachon. And I learned from the Chazon Ish that when you practice bitachon in the smaller areas, you're strengthening the muscles. And halavai, we should never be tested by big things. But we want to use our bitachon in the smaller areas as well. So let's look at that very pasuk, very same pasuk, sugya that we were looking at. At the end of the parsha of Sar Hamashkim, the pasuk says, V'lo zachar Sar Hamashkim et Yosef v'yishkachehu. Now, if you don't remember somebody, you forget them. So why does the Torah have to tell you V'lo zachar Sar Hamashkim et Yosef v'yishkachehu? So we have one medrash that says he forgot Yosef, but Hashem didn't. But then we have the medrash Hagadol, which teaches us something which, to me, I apply this to my life a lot. The Medrash says, "Al tikre v'yishkachehu, ela v'yishak Chehu. Don't read it that he forgot, but rather he was caused to forget. The Yishak Chehu. Hashem made him forget. And here, I developed a class that I gave in one of my classes of Bitachon. And boy, did I get a lot of, like, everybody was sweating over this one. People's forgetfulness is also part of Hashem's plan. And I will make a distinction between two types of forgetfulness. Some of them we don't say that about, but a lot of them we do. So I want to show you that I made a list from here till tomorrow morning about all the things that that people forget. It could be something like I had a woman in one of my classes who somebody forgot to close the freezer when they left overseas for 3 weeks. And she got back and all the carpets had to be pulled off and the house was disgusting and had to be whatever, I don't know what. And the people who forget to shut off the air conditioning when you go on vacation for 2 weeks, and the child who forgot the key and you got locked out, and the person who forgot the credit card and you had to stop all your things, so many things. The teacher who forgets to call on the weak child in the class, the loved one who forgot your birthday, and then there are some serious ones. I have a very dear friend who a doctor forgot to administer a certain medication after an organ transplant, and the transplant failed, and the child needed the surgery to be done again. And then you have kalas who forget to take the medication to regulate their cycle, and they have a chuppas nida. You have all kinds of forgetfulness in this world.
Oh my gosh.
And then you have the shadchan who forgets your child, who set up all the friends, but when you came with your child, they kind of never followed through. They forgot about your child. There's so much forgetfulness in this world. And we need to anchor our bitachon. And we be able to say that the outcome of forgetfulness is also part of Hashem's plan. In fact, if I say to myself, the child forgot the credit card and the key, and it ruins my day, I have to be able, the Chazon Ish says, that part of bitachon is switching cause and effect. I was supposed to struggle today, and that's why the child forgot the key. In fact, that's one of the biggest signs of working on your bitachon, is when you could flip the cause and effect. Because you'll see this happened because the doctor forgot. And people who have bitachon can often forgive people for those kind of mistakes. I think that sometimes we try to micromanage people's memories. You know, I'm involved sometimes with organizations where, like, you know, you're having, like, an event and everyone's supposed to bring something and you get this. You've committed to make a salad for this night. And then a week later, just reminding you that next Wednesday night, you know, you're committed for the salad. And then the night before, don't forget to bring the salad. And then guess what? You leave the salad on the table. And I think to myself sometimes, you know why that happens? Because when somebody else micromanages your memory, you don't necessarily own it. And, you know, a lot of us don't know our loved ones' phone numbers because the phone numbers are stored in the memory of our phone, and we used to know everybody's numbers. Now we don't know anybody's numbers anymore. And sometimes we try to micromanage people to get them to remember. There are so many aspects of these forgetful things. And then you have the more psychological ones. The child who forgets any nice memories of his childhood and only remembers the bad things that happen. We have all kinds of things about the way people, what people remember, what they forget. And there's so much where we need to have some bitachon about the Yishak Chehu. Okay. Now I want to present a stira to this idea, a contradiction. Sefsei Chaim, of Chaim Freelander, says that shechacha is a form of cognitive atzlos, cognitive laziness. So one second. If I'm being lazy, then I'm responsible for then this was my problem that I didn't remember. So is this that Hashem made me forget, or is it that I'm lazy? So I want to say from my personal life, and I think you probably have examples for yourself also, sometimes you know which one it is. When my daughter, who was in nursing school, needed me to pick up her child from school, and I looked at my watch and said, oh! Because I left some child sitting outside the school waiting for me. That's different than when my non-technological mind and my kids try to explain to me how to use a certain technological device and I keep on forgetting. In one case, in the second case, I couldn't be bothered to really listen properly. And I don't care about these things. And I kind of looked at some place in my mind that belongs. I was supposed to be born in the 17th century. Somehow I ended up in this century. And you could tell me 10 times how to use that device and I still don't know. That's my laziness. But leaving my beloved grandchild to cry in front of the school because their bubby forgot, that was vishakhehu. I did not want to forget that. So I think that we have times when we forget things, where really it was part of Hashem's plan, and we never, ever use that in a way that takes away our responsibility. And here I want to share a very important principle. Every midah can be abused. The abuse of bitachon is negligence, is irresponsibility, is apathy. Well, if that's what Hashem wanted, so that's what happened. So we have to take full responsibility for things. And forward going, I need to put a reminder system so that I'll never leave a kid not picked up. But when we beat ourselves up about something that happened that we never would have wanted it to happen, we have to realize that shechacha is also part of Hashem's plan. And sometimes these things happen. And my friend with the organ transplant forgave the doctor. She said, no doctor would ever, ever want to forget and have to, chas v'shalom, have such a failing situation. So we have to know when to forgive ourselves, to plan better for the future, but to know that here too, shechacha is also, it's one of these areas which is like in Hashem's hands. And there's so many, and when you have the forgetful child, you may have to decide not to give him a credit card in the future. You may have to send somebody for executive functioning coaching. But the fact that your day was ruined, that was going to happen anyway. And I think it's very, very important for us to understand this. Okay. So many different places we can go. And I'm dafka choosing today to go into the smaller areas of bitachon, because the bigger areas, I'm happy to also, you know, take some direction if people want me to address any specific type of challenge. But I don't want to get so specific that it's one person's challenge and not another's. So I'm trying to find things that are more general. Okay. How much time do we have? We have till 10:30. Okay. I want to share with you that two areas where people struggle a lot, and neither of them are, you know, beyond, it's not like life and death type things. But they're two very, very big if I'm going to call it like things that we worship in our world. Convenience is one of them, and money is another. So I like to talk sometimes about what are our bitachon anchors for money and for convenience. Money, the Gemara Beit HaTazayin says, Mezonos shel Adam Ktsuvim, person's money is allotted from Shamayim. Now, we know that the difference between emuna and bitachon is that emuna is what I know about how Hashem interacts with the world, and bitachon is how that filters down to my reactions to situations. Okay, so I want to demonstrate. Most of us know that Hashem controls finance, that there's a yearly allotment of finance. But what happens when your salary is bigger than your allotment? There will be a loss, a financial loss. What happens when your salary is smaller than the yearly allotment? You'll get an IRS return from 50 years ago that you didn't know you they owed you money, or some Yerusha, or something will happen. Because Hashem has his ways that he evens out Parnassa. Now, I always say that it's interesting that since money and convenience are two very big focuses, foci, I think you said it right? Is that even, foci? In the Western world, sometimes there are some people who, because money is the main focus, they are willing to go through a lot of inconvenience to save money. Like they'll go to the other side of town because the cornflakes are on sale, even though it takes them an hour to get there. And then you have the people whose main focus is convenience, and they'll spend a lot of money on pre-cut, pre-chopped, you know, salt water made for you for the Seder just in case it's too hard to make it yourself, and everything else that exists in the world today. Every time I come to America, I see a few more that are like, wow. It's Hashem's joke on us when one person marries the other type, like, you know, the money person marries the convenience person. So I want to share with you, and I know that I spoke about Bitachon a few years ago. I don't remember. I hope I didn't speak about this one. Do you remember? Did I speak about this? Remember? No? Okay. I'm looking at somebody who I think will remember. What's that? What?
We're old. We don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember what I said 5 minutes ago. So. Because I just have like 50 things I could talk about. I wouldn't want to repeat myself. If anybody remembers that we did the money convenience thing, I'll go on to something else. Okay. So the money thing is, it's pretty clear what Chazal want from us. Because if the Gemara says that your money is allotted, then when you go from emuna to bitachon, you are actually trying to work on your reactions. So the washing machine breaks, an expensive piece of jewelry gets lost, somebody overcharges you for something, all these things that annoy us and bother us so much. We learned yesterday, and I always say this in all my classes, your primary response is not where your bechira is. So when you first say, oi, or how did that happen? That's a primary response. We don't judge ourselves on our primary responses. Bitachon is a secondary response. In fact, the Chazon Ish says that the purpose of bitachon is lerapoto, lahachlimo, ulinahalo. To heal the person, lerapoto, lahachlimo means to rehabilitate him, ulinahalo to direct him. So something has to need to be cured that bitachon is going to cure. When people say it's all good, they're either kidding themselves or they're not allowing themselves to process the primary response that this does bother me, and now I need to calm myself, heal myself, direct myself. So therefore, when your primary response is that you're upset at a loss, that's your teva. And some people don't care about money, they're not going to be bothered. But people who are, bitachon is secondary. Now, our biggest proof of this is in Tehillim, where we say, Sher malos esay nail harim me'ayin yavo ezri. Where is my help coming from? The next pasuk says, Ezri me'im Hashem. The three words, me'ayin yavo Ezri, are there to teach you that all primary responses are valid. Even our avos hakdoshim, for a second felt, uh-oh, who's going to help me? And then they access the secondary response, Ezri me'im Hashem, Hashem's going to help me. So we don't judge ourselves on our primary responses. So I once had a situation where I was doing some errands in Yerushalayim. I was in a firm neighborhood in Yerushalayim. I walk into a supermarket and I got pickpocketed. Now, the interesting twist of the story is that if I would have been pickpocketed a half hour before, the robber would have received an empty wallet. Instead, they had a whole month's salary. I had just cashed a check, put it into my wallet, and I was on my way to the bank after. And on top of that, a refund for a very expensive appointment through my insurance. So I had a lot of money, more money than I probably ever had in my wallet, was in my wallet. And the other thing that happened was that my next stop after the store was that I was supposed to visit my son in yeshiva. So before I went into the supermarket, I had taken out some things out of my wallet that were for my son. I'd taken out a card that he needed, his, you know, card for something, a receipt, and some money for him, and I left it in the car. And then I walked into the store and I was pickpocketed. So this is what we call a bad hashkacha story. What I mean is, it's so clearly hashkacha, but it's not that like, wow, happily ever after and amazing. This was, in my world, bad. Lowercase b bad. But it was such hashkacha. It was like a surgery. Hashem put me into the Nisayon big time, took my son out of the Nisayon, and then my wallet was taken. And of course, because this is Yerushalayim, what was the song that was going in the background in the store was Hashem Melech, Hashem Malach, Hashem Yimlach. So when I was originally upset because it was a big loss, I said, okay, Bitachot is your secondary response. How are you going to move from Emuna, Mizon Sof Shel Adam Ktuvim, to Bitachon? I said to myself, clearly Hashem has a different salary in mind for me. And I was getting paid more than my yearly allotment. And he had a way that he had to even it out with me. And then I started thinking that of all the ways Hashem could even the score, as much as robberies bother us, they don't have other side effects. Meaning, when you have a medical issue, there's the medical issue and there's the money you pay for it. When your car breaks down, there's the inconvenience of the garage and the loss and the money. When you have a root canal, you have pain and you have to pay for it. I started realizing that being pickpocketed is pretty clean. It doesn't come with so many other things. So this is the work that we want to do, to take from Amunah to Bitachon, and it's work. But this is what the Chazon Ish says, Bitachon comes to heal you. That's what it's here for. So now I want to move for a second into the other piece, which is a little more subtle, which is the inconvenience piece. What is our source in the Torah for inconveniences being Mishamayim? So like I said, the Gemara in Bates is very clear. Inconvenience is a little more subtle. The Pasuk in Tehillim Tzadik Dalet, Pasuk says, Ashrei ha-gever asher tiasreinu ka umitorasecha telamdeinu. Blessed is the man, happy is the man who gets Yisurim from Hashem, and Hashem teaches him from his Torah. Now the first thing I need to do is to define the word Yisurim. Yisurim mean terrible tragedies, but they also mean minor inconveniences. Chazal and Erech and Tezayin give four examples of things that they call Yisurim. The one that we all know about is that you put your hand into the pocket to take out a certain change and you come out with the wrong change. The Gemara has a few other examples that are all like this. Person puts on a shirt backwards, he has to take it off and put it on again. He wants to get a certain temperature of water, he gets another temperature. He has a piece of clothing made for him and it doesn't fit him. So why are these things called Yisurim? So these are my thoughts, you could take it or leave it. I think that maybe it shows us that Hashem wants us, ideally, the default is that we should have a perfect life. And even the little things that are inconvenient are not what Hashem really l'chachila wanted for you. And therefore, there's meaning to everything. I tell my students that maybe this is teaching us to be a little less judgmental about what people consider difficult. Because things don't have to be a life-threatening challenge for you to suffer. The Gemara calls that Yisurim. And sometimes, you know, you have a roommate in seminary and she's having a hard time, you know, I don't know what, washing dishes because her mother always had a cleaning lady. And you're rolling your eyes saying, oh, you're so spoiled. But you know what? Different people are going to consider different things difficult. A little less judgment on what people consider difficult. But either way, if we read the Gemara in Erechin back into the Pasuk in Tehillim Tzadik Daled, it reads, lucky is the person who is inconvenienced by Hashem, and Hashem teaches him from his Torah. The Yalkut Shimoni on this Pasuk says that Yisurim, inconveniences like money, are designated from Shammai. The Yalkut says, there are three people who are supposed to lose sleep. One loses sleep because of a toothache. One loses sleep because of an eye ache. And one loses sleep because he was learning Torah. Balzen amar ashrei hagever asher tiasreinu ka umitorasecha telamdeinu. If you're going to lose sleep anyway, better to lose it around a mitzvah. We learn a few things from this Yalkut, but one thing that we learned is that the inconvenience is the constant, the loss of sleep is the constant, the reason is the variable. The person was going to lose sleep. How is the question? So here we learn that inconvenience is also katsa from Shemayim. And I developed a visual on this topic that I call the inconvenience pie, which means that there's a certain amount of inconvenience that a person's supposed to have. When you get stuck on a very long line in the supermarket, this happens in Israel all the time. It's a new person working. She doesn't know how to use the machine, and you're looking at everybody else, and you're like, oh, I have to get out of here. So the inconvenience was katsav, and I could just cut a little bit out of my pie, and it means that there's less inconvenience to go around, because it's also limited. It's also designated. So we often think like, oh, I should have taken the other road. I shouldn't got stuck in this traffic. I should have done this. And the answer really is that there's a certain amount of inconvenience that a person has to experience. And when you have an inconvenience, you just cut a slice out. Makes you a little bit calmer about all those, this shouldn't have happened. But now we're getting to the Ruchnius piece. Mitzarasacha telam deinu. The Yalkut is teaching us that when an inconvenience comes through a mitzvah, you shouldn't say to yourself, if I wouldn't have to do this mitzvah, life would be simpler. Because we learn that the inconvenience is the constant and the variable is hell. In fact, the Torah says if you lost sleep over your Torah learning, ashrecha. Why? Because at least you get schar for it. You don't get schar for the toothache. You cut a little bit out of your inconvenience pie, but you didn't get schar. And we know that the Avos, the Rabbi Nasan Paragimel says about mitzvos, echad bitzar shaveh lemeah shelo bitzar. A mitzvah that you do that was difficult to do gets 100 times more reward than a mitzvah that was easy. And maybe that's the ashrei. Because anyway, I was going to lose the sleep or get stuck in traffic. But at least I got stuck in traffic on the way to go do a chesed. And now that chesed is worth 100 times more. So it's asking us a little bit to reevaluate our hashkafa towards inconvenient mitzvos. And therefore, a woman in one of my classes says she has a beautiful home in Rehavia. She says she doesn't say yes to the seminary girls who ask because she's a perfectionist. She has to iron the linen before and iron the linen after. And I'm telling her they're so happy to sleep in a clean bed. They don't care if it's ironed or not. But she said, you know what? I always say no because I don't want to have a hectic Erev Shabbos. Well, I'm going to do a test. She said yes to the guests, and Friday was no less hectic, no more hectic because of it. If it's not the ironing, it's something else. This doesn't mean that we're allowed to dictate to Hashem, okay, Hashem, I'll schlep people's suitcases all day and all night, and you won't give me any other yisurim. We don't tell Hashem how to do things. But when a mitzvah comes our way, and the reason why we think not to do it is we can't be bothered, we have to realize that there's a whole parallel society of people who don't do mitzvahs, and they also say their life is inconvenient. I'm yet to meet a person from any walk of life, even the ones who are not showing mitzvos, and they don't say, oh, I just sit on the beach all day and do nothing. They're talking about this inconvenience and that thing that went wrong. Everybody has inconveniences. So the Torah is telling you, Ashrei, you're lucky if your inconveniences come through a mitzvah. I want to end for today by telling you a real life story that demonstrates this concept. The backdrop to the story is that I have cousins who are very, very funny. And they make a Hanukkah party and they try to think of some cute theme. So maybe some people in this room are old enough to know what I mean by this. They did, the theme of the party was candid camera for tzedekuses. Anybody remembers what candid camera was?
Yeah.
Okay. So what they did was, they didn't tell anybody they were doing this, but they called all the relatives from an unlisted number, pretending to be a chesed organization, asking them to do a very difficult chesed, and recorded their responses. So one relative got a phone call. Hi, I'm calling from Yad, Avram and Sarah. We have like a Chinese auction once a year where we raise money for the whole year. And I'm the person running it, but I'm not really feeling so good today. And somebody said that you'd be the best person to take over the event. So can you please pick up the driver, pick up the prizes, open the hall, collect the money, give out the prizes, return the thing, clean up the hall. You're going to do it, right? So this was like, they came to the party and showed everybody how they responded. There was one call that got to my poor sister, who's a real tzedekus. The person says, hi, we're calling from a certain orphanage. And we have a very lovely 7-year-old boy who really needs a home to be in. We took certain facts and certain, you know, things that we need to go. And we put it through like a computer program of thousands of families in Yerushalayim, and you were elected. He said, so will you take him in? So my sister's like, wow, thank you so much. I'm so honored. I want to think about it. Let me discuss it with my husband. The person on the other end gets aggressive. When's your husband coming home? I said, I'll help you home 7th grade. No, that's too late. He's sitting on the suitcase right now. So this was like the back and forth. And it was a funny party when everybody was like laughing at the party. I don't know how much they appreciated it at the time. Fast forward. And I got into a real life situation like this. My daughter was learning in Beis Yaakov Beis Yisrael, which is a Beis Yaakov that's right near the Mir Yeshiva, which has an interesting demographic. A certain percentage of the student body are Anglo families from Malot Dafna, Arzei Abira, usually more financially secure. But it's also right next to Rehov Shmuel HaNavi, which is one of the poorest areas in Yerushalayim. And there's a beautiful dynamic where all of the kids from Malot Dafna and, you know, they have like the 10th pair of sneakers that their grandmother bought them, but they don't wear it to school because there's some kids who barely have one pair. And you don't bring your fancy snacks to school. And there's a lot of sensitivity from a very young age, you know, navigating all these, you know, financial, you know, gaps. So there was one girl in my daughter's class in 3rd grade who not only was she a Shmuel HaNavi girl, but her father had died in a terrorist attack. The mother was raising 4 little children by herself, and it was a very, very, very difficult situation. So the Anglo parents in the class collected money. And in general, Anglo parents in most classes had like a kupa, that when there was someone in the class who couldn't afford a trip or a book bag or something, the other parents would cover. But in this case, there was like a whole funding for this girl. And one of the things that she needed was like a mentor. She needed a teenage girl to take her out, you know, and do homework with her and buy her ice cream and just befriend her because the mother was really, 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 you know, very stressed. So this is going on, being funded by the parents. And 3 years later, there was a bas mitzvah program. And I went to the program, and I see this mother and daughter interacting. Malcolm Gladwell has a concept called thin slicing. Thin slicing is when you see something and you learn something big from it. So I saw this mother and daughter interacting, and I had this feeling that there was so much tension there and that this mentor was not in the picture anymore. I went over to the teacher after the event, and I said, what's with the mentor? She said, interesting, you should say, this mentor was very loyal for 3 years. She just got married. And right now there's no one in the picture. I said, well, I could tell that there needs to be someone in the picture. So the Israeli teacher says to me in her very candid way, she says, oh, okay, so you find the mentor, she says to me. I said, I'd be very happy to, but I don't know the culture of this girl at all to know it would be appropriate. So she takes out a piece of paper and she says, I'll give you 2 names of 2 people who I think would be the right person for you to call. And she writes down Gveret and Gveret. Gveret means a married woman. I said, I thought we're looking for a single girl who has time for mentoring. She says, oh, no, these are married women with big families. But you'll see. They're the right ones. So all of a sudden, there I was, the candid camera person, because I'm calling somebody who I don't know. And I say, hi, do you want to mentor a girl? They don't know me. They don't know the girl. It was literally like one of those kind of phone calls, but this was real life. I call, I introduce myself, the person doesn't know who I am. I said, you know, there's a very lovely girl, she's 12 years old, she lost her father, and there was a mentor, got married. This woman, and I hear the noise in the background, there's lots of kids in this family. She cuts me off like 30 seconds into the conversation, and she says, okay, do you want her to move in tomorrow? Ooh. And I'm like a little shocked. And I said, are you sure? Like, do you want to think about that? This is a big decision. She says, well, she could either live at home and come to us, you know, and spend the days by us, or she could even sleep here, and she could start tomorrow. She doesn't even know the girl's name yet. Nothing. I said, don't you want to, like hear more or think about it more? So she says to me something which showed me that people are living with this Ashreya Gefer. She says to me, Gveret, do you think that if I say no to fostering a girl who needs a home, that my life will be any more convenient? She says, and spaghetti doesn't spill on the floor and things don't break? And it was just like, silence. And then she says, oh, but I have to ask you something. I'm like, oh, Baruch Hashem, she has some questions. She wants to know something. And then I'm realizing the money. I didn't tell her that we have money collected for this. I said to her, oh, Ken, yeshtanot, kasef, lo, lo, kasef, no, no. No convenience and no money. She doesn't need either of them. She says, I want to interview her today to see if the dynamic would be good between her and my children. And if it would be good, she can move in tomorrow. And if not, I'll find her the place. And to the best of my knowledge, this girl was with this family until she recently got married.
Wow.
And to think that there are some people who live with this. They realize that inconvenience doesn't come through mitzvahs. So they're not going to say no to a mitzvah because of convenience. Now, again, we have to be careful. Like I always send out my psychological disclaimers. This doesn't mean that you become a masochist. This means that when there's a mitzvah, which is like the drive is a little out of the way, not something that's going to turn your whole life upside down and you're going to, but something that you're saying, oh, you say to yourself, people who don't keep mitzvos also have inconveniences. And ashrei hagever asher tiyasrenu ka mitor sacha telamdenu. So what we learned today is a Torah hashkafa towards loss of money, but also a Torah hashkafa towards inconvenience in general, and religiously oriented inconveniences specifically. And I think since we all have mitzvos that are not easy for us, not every mitzvah is easy for everybody. But to realize that the inconvenience that comes through it can come another way, and you get 100 times more schar. And I'll end with the very last thing. The Aruch HaTzaddikim says that if you do a mitzvah, b'simcha, you get 1,000 times more schar. And how does the Aruch HaTzaddikim expect what it means b'simcha? Shelo ye alav kimasa. You shouldn't view it as a burden. Meaning, if you're already going to say yes to those Shabbos guests, and it's a difficult week for you, but you want to do it, and you stand up straight, and you graciously say, I can handle this, 100 times 1,000 is 100,000 times more higher for the mitzvah. So maybe that's Ashrei HaGever. A lot of the world has inconveniences, and when you do one through a mitzvah, it really has tremendous, tremendous benefit. Thank you so much, everybody. Thank you.